This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. You know, the one thing that I forgot to ask Spencer Carberry is, will we expect a Ryan Leonard to suit up for the Washington Capitals in the playoffs? Juicy Junior, real juicy. We'll see. They'll face off against the New York Rangers. With that, we'll bring aboard Greg Wyshynski from ESPN and The Drop. How are you today, Wish?
I'm good. That was a big surprise last night. The Caps are not a team I expected in the playoffs. I find it amazing that, you know, at the end of the day, Ovi's in and Sid's out, which is not anything that I think any of us expected at the beginning of the season.
You know,
maybe they both get in. One of them get. I didn't think it'd be that, though.
Yeah, no, I didn't have that one on my card either. But, you know, the first thing I thought of, like, okay, so they're facing the New York Rangers in the first round. And you can recall back in, this would have been 2010. This is like the beginning of Capital Mania with Ovechkin running wild. And they were so hot, so good. And they're playing the Montreal Canadiens in the opening round. And I remember we're all saying, oh, Capitals in three. They won't even bother playing the fourth game. This one's going to be And then all of a sudden, like, Yaroslav Halak channels the ghost of Jacques Plante. And Mike Camilleri scoring big goal after big goal. And assistant coach Kirk Muller is drawing it up at the bench. And everything is clicking together. And they end up beating the Washington Capitals. And now I look at the Capitals and I think of them facing off against the New York Rangers in the first round. And that's the first place my brain went. Because if you look at the Rangers, they got them beat in net. They got them beat on the blue line. They got them beat on forwards. They're stronger up the middle. Like, all of it. They got a coach that's won the cup. Washington's got the rookie coach in Spencer Carberry. Like, at every single level, I can't see how Washington even begins to beat the New York Rangers. But then I think, well, this happened to the Caps back in 2010 with Montreal, and Ovechkin would be the constant. I don't know. You think there's anything there? Or the Capitals are just dust?
All they need is Artemi Panarin to miss the net 150 times like Alex Semin did in that series.
And, that's right.
They'll be fine. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he was. That was, I mean, that's you know, part of that series. I covered that series when I was in Washington, and part of that series was definitely Halak playing out of his gourd. And if you remember, there was that whole thing about, like, what was it, shaking while he was trying to drink his water bottle or something, is what the Cap said. And then, like, you know, Halak after that, like, didn't give up a goal or some such. You know, it was a bit of Montreal really kind of playing into the underdog role and punching above their weight. But it was definitely the Capitals also imploding. And I guess to kind of see your through line all the way to its completion in the parallel, this is a Rangers team that was flummoxed last season when the Devils took that series over in games 3 and 4. Yeah. And it is a Rangers team that does have a lot of weight of the world on its shoulders insofar as being a team that many anticipate could win the cup this year. And this is a Capitals team that, like you said, they in theory should dispatch pretty easily, even though the Caps have shown to be a tough out. And so if things do get a little wonky, if the Caps walk into MSG on Sunday and walk out with a W,
I don't know
exactly. But of the teams, I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, of the teams that were floating around the bubble before the Caps earned the final spot yesterday, I would have said the Penguins were the toughest out, just because Sid and them in a seven-game series is going to be a tough hill to climb for anybody. Then I would probably go Detroit as the next toughest out, just because of how energetically they were playing towards the end of the season. And then I would have gone the Capitals, and then obviously the Flyers were the easiest path for the Rangers from the last wildcard spot. So again, I'm not expecting much from this series, but the Caps have a funny way of defying the odds. And, you know, full marks to Carberry, man. He did a really good job of identifying what this team was, and then getting them to buy into that idea, which is a very, very hard thing for a rookie coach to do.
So I just had him on a couple of seconds ago, and one of the things that I asked him about was that Brian McClellan press conference, where essentially he threw the towel in on the season and said, this is all about the kids, and next thing you know, Anthony Mantha's getting traded, and Kuznetsov's going to Carolina, Edmondson's going to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and this team, despite all of the subtractions, I mean, Kuznetsov was at Hershey after coming out of the program, and this was a divorce that was, you know, long anticipated and long overdue. But nonetheless, this team just started winning. Now, it wasn't always in the most entertaining fashion, And I don't think it's lost on anybody that the Capitals are going into the postseason here at a -37. And outside of, you know, Hartford and Vancouver in 1991, we haven't seen a -37 make it into the Stanley Cup playoffs. But here we are. Like, I don't know. I still think that there's a lot to be said. And listen, this is, we're focusing a lot on Carberry here. And he made a lot of different changes down the stretch too. Some he was really criticized for. Like, I'll be honest, like a lot of people said, like, oh, Carberry's changing too much. You know, Ovechkin doesn't know which line he's on from one period to another. But he tried everything. Like, he threw the proverbial kitchen sink at this Washington Capitals team, trying to make something work as all around him. And above him, the general manager was saying, nah, don't have it this year. We'll swing back next year and see what we do.
Yeah. No, you're right. And, you know, it's going to be, the Rangers are an interesting team in the playoffs because of their well-documented deficiencies at 5-on-5. Does that help the Capitals at all? I don't know. If the game isn't played on special teams, what's the landscape of the series look like? You know, the Caps with Lindgren are at the very least going to be able to stay in these games as long as this guy doesn't turn into a pumpkin.
Right.
You know, but I do think you're selling their achievement short, which is that the Capitals' goal differential this year happens in the wild card format. Back in the day, Vancouver and the Whalers, it's because somebody had to get in from the division. Like, we didn't have the conference format.
True.
Somebody from that division had to get in, and it's you absolute doormat, who couldn't, you know, there's a red carpet in front of your crease for opposing pucks to strut down. So the Capitals getting in with that goal differential is a real achievement.
How much of the Detroit-Montreal game did you watch last night?
I watched the end of it, and I watched the shootout because I was going back and forth between that and the Capitals game.
Okay, so did you see, I don't know, I keep coming back on this one because I always find it, A, hilarious, and B, a really gutsy one if you're going to be an official and you make the call on it. Did you see Shane Gostisbehere kind of try to get that puck that turned into an icing while David Perron just said, yeah, screw it, I'm straightening up my legs here and we're going to try to get the icing. And they called it, like, listen, Detroit Red Wings fans the last couple of weeks have been grousing about a lot of calls. I get it. I understand it. I get it. But then I always say to myself, by the end of the season, over to 82 games, generally it washes. I kind of looked at that because I think that was a blown icing call, right? I kind of look at that one and say, okay, you know what? That's a, not that they're trying to even it up, but in the grand scheme of things, that icing is an even up, or at least an attempt at an even up. How did you see Gostisbehere move his arms frantically while his feet barely moved as he chased down that puck?
It was what it was. I mean, it's an artifact of no touch icing. But I gotta say this, that, like, if there's anybody that can hear our voices now that is a Detroit Red Wings fan, and in the back of your mind, having seen some of the calls that have not benefited your team down the stretch, you believe that the NHL, in some way, shape, or form, does not want the Detroit Red Wings to be part of the postseason for the first time in several seasons. Yeah. I have to be honest with you. I think the National Hockey League and also its maybe partners would like to have the Detroit Red Wings back in the playoffs sooner than later.
Yes.
I can tell you that definitively.
Yes, 100% absolutely true. Well, you know, Marchese and I were talking about this yesterday. Just when you look at, like, what that rink has been like down the stretch here, like, how do you not want that in the playoffs? And then, like, I look at the Montreal Canadiens as well. Like, you look at the great buildings that you want in the playoffs and how insane it is. Like, I always tell people, as a hockey fan, there's a lot of boxes you have to check, things you have to do. You know, right up around the top is, you know, you have to be on a Saturday night, 7:01 in Montreal, in that rink when the lights go down and it's the ghosts of the forum and all that nonsense. You got to be part of that at least once in your life.
It's really funny you say that because I was watching that Detroit game last night with my wife Ruby and the kid in the living room, and we were watching this game and she turned to me unprompted and says, "We should really go see a game in this arena." and like, it's
true.
Rare is the time she's ever like, "More hockey, please," given how much she has to deal with on a daily basis being married to me. But even that television experience last night for a team that's out of the playoffs had her thinking that we should go catch a game at Bell Center. No, you're absolutely right. And So let me ask you this about Detroit, because I saw this floating around last night after they were eliminated. We are now, I believe, 4 years into the Iser plan, if memory serves.
Yeah.
Where do you think it is? I mean, they clearly didn't have any lottery luck, you know, to give them that one thing that they're missing within the organization, which is that top tier build around them type player, preferably at center. They do have some good young players in the system and on the roster now, but ultimately, you know, the team that has competed this season is a pretty veteran laden team. So where do you think the Iser plan is after 4 years?
I don't think we can make up our minds on Iserman's Detroit Red Wings until we start to see a lot of those players that you mentioned, the pipeline players, the players that are playing on Grand Rapids, graduate to the NHL. I think right now, out of necessity, I could put it this way. The last two summers, I'm of the belief, and again, this is only my belief on this one. I haven't been told this, but I'm of the belief that people above Steve Yzerman have kind of said the rebuild's taking too long. Mm-hmm. Let's move this along. Let's get some players in here. That's very much the way that it is felt. But I don't think that we're going to be able to judge what he's been able to put on the ice until we start to see, you know, a more consistent, like until we see Simon Edvinson play an entire season, until we see Sebastian Costa play for the Detroit Red Wings in net over a season here. So I know it might be taking a little bit longer than some people may have wanted. Listen, I think that, you know, in our life right now, technology has made us believe that things can change instantly. And it's sort of, you know, it's tough to run a sports organization when everyone in the crowd is of the belief that things can change instantly for you. But I think that he's building this thing for the long term, all the while. Like, it has to be a huge pressure with a new building. Like, I don't think we talk enough about this. This is a brand new rink that they want to fill as often as possible. And when you do a scorched earth rebuild, you're bad for a long time. And fans don't come. And that's why I don't think that the Detroit Red Wings, you mentioned lottery luck, and that's true, have the luxury of being really bad for a long time to pick up the Connor Bedards, the Macklin Celebrinis, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I still, but to your point about not having like elite players to build around, I don't know, man. Lucas Raymond took a major step this year.
Boy, did he.
Like,
boy,
I look at the Red Wings and say, holy smokes. I remember, I mean, at the time when Yzerman made that pick, much like when he made the Moritz Seider pick in Vancouver, a lot of us went, what is he doing? Why is he taking this player so high? And again, it's patience, it's patience, it's patience. That's Yzerman. He was patient with Jeff Blashill. He's patient with Mason Raymond. That's the thing about Yzerman. He takes his time, and I think it's because he's built up enough equity in the game that nobody really doubts him. And I think that's just going to continue here with Detroit. How do you feel?
I think that they've got a good collection of guys that are A-minuses, and that's not to besmirch Lucas Raymond. I think he's great, and not to besmirch what Edvinson could eventually become. I've met the kid. He's great, and he's an absolute, you know, skyscraper.
Huge.
and then, you know, they've got some other players in the system that I think are promising too. But, you know, the Iser plan worked in Tampa because they had Stamkos and Hedman and Kucherov. You know, like, they had a tier above what I think is on this Detroit Red Wings roster right now. And it's not to say it all can't come together and get them into the playoffs next season. There's a lot to like. I just think if the ultimate goal is to win a cup, I'm not sure what we're seeing here in the organization top to bottom as far as like a team that has the potential to really make that leap. There's just not enough elite high-end talent on the roster, given, and again, I say that within the context of given how bad the team has been in the last few seasons, there should be more of it.
So following that, then here's the question. Here's the one question I think that Red Wings fans need to ask themselves too. On a Stanley Cup team, is Dylan Larkin a first line center or second line center?
I think he could be a first line center, but I think you need stuff behind him. Like, you know, that's the problem right now with the Red Wings is that if there was a guy who could be a 1A with Larkin, like, then you're in business. I just think that he's on an island right now, you know, and that's part of my problem. I mean, again, like, when rare is the team that has been as mediocre as the Red Wings have been. And again, they, like you said, they've not been terrible because they do have to fill seats. They have to be at least competitive. And maybe ultimately that's going to be what we look back on and say that's the flaw in the Iser plan. But rare is a team that wanders the wilderness for as long as the Red Wings have as a team that hasn't been in the playoffs since 2016 and not come up with at least two really good young centers, you know, that you're kind of building around. The Devils ended up with Hughes and Hischier.
Yeah,
you know, for example, and other teams.
But those are first overall picks.
Well, I know they're first overall picks, but again, a lot of this is lottery luck, and that's a fair point. But I don't know. I just feel like for a team that hasn't been in the mix since 2016, mm-hmm. I should look at the depth of the organization, and I should be a little bit more. I don't know. I don't know if blown away is the right word, but really excited about the future. And as it stands, I'm like impressed with it, but I see it as a playoff team and not a championship contender in the making.
Okay. So then let's group those with the other two teams that we always group the Detroit Red Wings with, the Ottawa Senators and Buffalo Sabres.
Uh-huh.
Because those teams, you see the potential for greatness.
The collection of prospects the Buffalo Sabres have, and again, I think the benefit was that they've been, you know, demonstrably worse than the Red Wings have been in most mm-hmm. seasons. I would take that prospect pool over the Red Wings.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could make Ottawa might be a little bit closer, but, you know, there's still guys in that roster that really impressed me too.
What do you make of the Buffalo Sabres and their coaching situation? Now, Kevin Adams came out yesterday in his press conference after dismissing Don Granato and talked about veteran coaches. So right away, we thought of Lindy Ruff, and we thought of Craig Berube, and maybe an outside, Hail Mary pass at Rod Brind'Amour if it doesn't work out with the Carolina Hurricanes. What did you make of A, the dismissal, and B, the subsequent press conference from Kevin Adams and the idea of bringing in the veteran coach, and who might that be?
I was a little surprised because I read some reports in Buffalo yesterday that Seth Apart might be the guy that they were thinking of.
Let me pause on that because he's a real interesting guy.
Yeah.
First of all, excellent coach. He's done wonderful things so far in Rochester. And again, this year, now a lot of Levi's been great for him, too, but they've done Rochester's been a really good team for a long time here under Seth Appert. The thing about it is I've looked at that. I threw this in my notes this week. I could see before Kevin Adams came out and said, veteran coach.
Yeah.
I could have seen Seth Appert with the Buffalo Sabres alongside a veteran assistant beside him or a veteran associate.
Right.
And the name that I kept coming back to, and this is someone who they were goaltending partners at Ferris State. I know they're, really good friends. They still keep in touch. Someone like Jeff Blashill. I wondered if it could be Seth Appert and Jeff Blashill as an associate coach, not an mm-hmm. assistant coach as he is in Tampa. But then Kevin Adams came out yesterday and blew it out of the water.
Yeah, he blew it out of the water. And I was surprised at that because I did think that there was an argument to be made for get a guy who can relate to your younger players,
yes,
who has worked with your younger players. We talked about this on the show before, me and you, about the Bruce Cassidy move in Boston. And when Bruce Boudreau came up in Washington, maybe you need a guy named Bruce in hindsight to make this thing work. But in both those cases, it was bringing in a guy who wasn't necessarily top of mind, but it was the guy that they really felt could get more out of the younger supporting cast than the previous coach had. Now, the twist here is that Don Granato is kind of also that guy. He's also the relate to the younger players, be the teacher, nurture them around, make them better kind of guy. So it's not as if you're bringing in someone, it's not a Bruce Cassidy replacing Claude Julien type situation. Mm-hmm. But like you said, that's all conjecture now because it's clear what they're looking for. And, the veteran coaches out there are guys like your Todd McClellan's, I guess.
You just mentioned Claude Julien. Why not him?
Claude Julien? I don't know. Claude Julien's a tricky one because I mean, when's the last time we saw him? and how different is the league since he coached? And I know that's an interesting comment to make when we just saw Lindy Ruff have the same conversation surrounding him, and he ended up being pretty good in Jersey up until mm-hmm. this season. So I don't want to like dismiss a guy who seems like he's coaching from another era. But I'm going to be really intrigued to see which direction they go in there, because they clearly have something. They definitely need somebody like Claude who can come in and give them a bit more defensive structure. That's why, you know, the pie in the sky Brind'Amour thing would be incredible for them, because I think that he can come in and make them a hell of a lot better. But, you know, there's a lot of names out there and a lot of retreads out there, and it's going to be really interesting to see who Kevin Adams lands on, because this is a really, really important hiring for him.
So last week here, you and I talked about Joel Quenneville, and this was coming off the interview on the Cam and Strick podcast, where he told some things. He, you know, really did not want to talk about his conversations with Gary Bettman, did not want to talk about whether he received all the money that was owed to him on his contract. But, you know, the more that I thought of the fact that he did the interview in the first place, much like the Ryan Smith interview we did on 32 Thoughts last week, I don't think that either Ryan Smith last year or Joel Quenneville last week do those interviews without the blessing of the NHL, given how sensitive the situations are. Now, with Ryan Smith, it was trying to get a team in Utah, and with Joel Quenneville, it's trying to get back reinstated, where you need to be very careful about every move that you make as to not upset the National Hockey League. And by that, I mean Gary Bettman and Bill Daly. Do you think Quenneville's name enters the chat this offseason?
You think he got the green light from the league to go on a podcast?
I can't see Joel Quenneville doing something like that, sticking his neck out, doing like a long form podcast interview without at least running it by the NHL. Like if he's going to be reinstated, do you think he would at least give like Bill Daly a courtesy, like, hey, I'm going to do this. Are you okay with this? Because he's remained completely silent through all of this time.
Well, he's not sticking his neck out, though. He knows it's a safe harbor.
The fact that he's putting himself out there publicly, so the conversation can begin.
But he's not putting himself out there to, like, me or you.
he's putting himself out there on a podcast that is
associated with the St. Louis Blues, where he's a sainted guy, and that in the past has had on Mike Babcock, Tim Peel, and Eustace King in interviews that were basically reputation mending.
He knows it's
a safe harbor.
The thing is, I don't think he even raises his head above the crowd right now unless he has the blessing of the NHL to do so. Like, we talked about trial balloons last week with this one. Like, that's why I don't think for one second that this thing was just completely a knee-jerk reaction that Joel Quenneville woke up one day and said, I feel like doing a podcast.
The really interesting thing for me about Quenneville and reinstatement, and this is what came up last year when it looked like the Rangers might be in the Joel Quenneville business, is who has to have the definitive word in why this person is working again in the league. Is it the NHL? Do they come out and say, here is the work that Joel Quenneville has done mm-hmm. to regain our trust, to show that he has changed, to show that he has acknowledged what happened in Chicago and how it could never happen again? The conversations he's had maybe with the people impacted by that scandal in Chicago. And also why we are comfortable allowing this person back in the league, knowing that there is active litigation against the Chicago Blackhawks from other Black Aces based on what happened there under Quenneville's watch, or does that fall to the team that hires him? Like, I'm really intrigued. There's going to have to be some conversation and some statement made that explains why Joel Quenneville is employed again in the National Hockey League. And I don't know if that's a buck that gets passed to the team that hires him or if it's the league that takes it upon themselves to take the bullet, basically, and say, here's our decision. And you know, don't go yelling at the Sabres for hiring this guy. It's our call.
Of all the teams that we've just been talking about, the Ottawa Senators, the Detroit Red Wings, and the Buffalo Sabres, we've talked about them for a while. We all kicked it around last summer and into the beginning of the season. Which of the three will emerge? The answer is none. The Ottawa Senators have already had a bloodletting of sorts with a general manager losing his job and a coach as well. I don't know that I expect anything to happen or there be any consequences here with the Detroit Red Wings. The Buffalo Sabres have already fired a coach. If you and I are sitting here 12 months from now saying, well, We thought one of them would emerge, and the answer was none of them did. Mm-hmm. Is there a bloodletting anywhere? I tend to think it's Buffalo. Do you agree?
You tend to think it's Buffalo.
I do. If it's not playoffs next year for Buffalo, I think it's going to be a massacre there.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, for sure. And maybe that's part of the math if you're a coach that's looking to go there, right? Is that like all of a sudden the guy that had your back no longer has your back? Now, of the three, who makes the jump next year? Or is it none of the above again?
No, like I said it last year and I'll say it again this year. I think it's the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
I really do, because the Buffalo Sabres don't need to fix goaltending. Ottawa needs to fix goaltending. The Detroit Red Wings still have a goaltending issue.
They do.
So I always, again, maybe I just have a positional bias and a positional default, but the first position I always look at, okay, what can save you here? If you have goaltenders and Buffalo has at least one, and we think that Devon Levi is going to take that next step. He's been fantastic in Rochester, and he's ready to take that next step. Then I'll look at the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I also think that, you know, if you look at the DNA of a contending team, the Sabres have more pieces in place that I'm impressed with. You know, Power and Dahlin. You know, I like them at center better than I like either Ottawa or Detroit, I think. Mm. From a young depth perspective. And so, yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you that I think they're the ones that should take the leap, but that's why this hire is so important.
Oh, because huge.
You gotta find a guy that's going to be able to get more out of those young players and also lend them structure and insulate the goaltending a bit more. So it's not Devon Levi, you know, out there by himself for months on end before the team figured out some semblance of competent defense later in the season.
Yeah. Before we bid you good afternoon, it's going to be an emotional one tonight. I know we all like to make the jokes about, you know, Mullet Arena and barely anyone's there. But if you look at the ticket market right now, like it's, you know, thousands of dollars because everybody wants to be there for the last game. I don't know that we get a Eddie Olczyk Winnipeg Jets, you know, we're going to come back one day type of speech out of anyone with the Arizona Coyotes at the end of this one. Who knows? Someone may surprise us and, we may see a scenario like that. But this one's going to be an interesting one tonight. This one's going to be an emotional one tonight. The last game at the Mullet Arena before Arizona scoots off to Salt Lake City. What do you think tonight's going to be like at Mullet?
To be really sad. Like I, of the list of people that have been considered in the last few weeks regarding this relocation, I think Coyotes fans are probably last on the list for a lot of people. And I think there's a lot of fans and media around the league that have never met a Coyotes fan, to be quite honest with you. Mm-hmm. And I've been there. I've met them. I've talked to them. I talked to them throughout the years during the Glendale saga and the relocation saga. I've met guys with jerseys covered in commemorative pins from all the Coyotes seasons and years gone by. And this is a really rough one. And there's a lot of people that are having their hearts shattered right now. And the idea that they could come back in 5 years if Alex Morello builds an arena is not exactly a panacea to them, because one, they don't really like Alex Morello, if we're being honest. And two, they don't really believe they're going to get this arena done. Until you've been in this situation, you have no idea how it feels. I have been in this situation. I went to a Stanley Cup parade in 1995 for my beloved New Jersey Devils under the cloud of potential relocation to Nashville. Imagine that. Imagine your team finally raises the cup for the first time in their history, and the entire thing is tarnished because they might move to Nashville next year. And the people in Nashville had to deal with it. With Jim Balsillie and Hamilton and, you know, the Penguins in Kansas City. Until you've gone through it, you really don't know the absolute crisis of faith that goes on in a fan's heart in supporting a team and loving a team and then feeling absolutely helpless that team might abandon you. And I really feel for Coyotes fans tonight.
Was that the one the Devils won the half a cup?
"Oh, I'm going to murder you next time I see you." Yeah, they won a cup in the 48-game season,
right?
Beyond their control was a 48-game season, but also was the time, and I've talked to him about this subsequently. That was the time that Billy Guerin, now general manager of the Minnesota Wild, was dancing on stage in the parking lot of the Meadowlands with a Nashville No Way sign. Because that's how much it was inside the parade, Merrick.
Yeah.
They were still having to deal with the Nashville stuff. So, again, my heart goes out to every Coyotes fan that has sat through all this nonsense for the last 15 years.
Does it?
And I really do hope that something in some way, shape, or form comes back to that market, because it's a good market.
Does it not feel, I don't know what weird is the word, but we've kind of lived with this going back to 2009. Right, like you and I were working there. I remember I was in the courtroom with Judge Redfield T-Bomb presiding. That's when I was back working at CBC at Hockey Night in Canada, and I remember watching Jerry Moyes on the steps talk about how it's us now, and it's going to be Dallas next, and can't make any money, and all these teams are going to fold and everything, and all the different twists and turns and names and arenas and like all of it at every step of the way, it seemed as if, okay, here's another lifeline. Yeah. And now all of a sudden here we are, and we expect an announcement sometime tomorrow afternoon. Does it not seem kind of surreal that it's done and it happened really quickly here?
Extremely surreal. I mean, I think we were all prepared for it at different times, but it happens now at a time when it seemed like there was a plan. You know, all they wanted was a plan. We got a plan, they said. And they still said, plan ain't good enough. And by the way, they're right. But luckily, Merrick, I'm happy that we don't have to ever go through this where a team relocates to a southwestern U.S. market and moves into an arena that's not designed for hockey. I'm happy that we don't. Oh, shoot. Look at that. We're doing it next year, aren't we? Okay.
Real quick before I wrap up with you, I file this under "We can't miss you if you won't leave." Marc-Andre Fleury's back for another year.
I know. I mean, like, the guy's got
it's great.
He's got he's got the love of cinema in his heart, as they say about movies. Good for him, man. Keep playing until you can't play no more.
I'm with you.
It's like the old thing about employment, right? It's like you're employable until someone doesn't want to pay you to do the job. And I feel like as long as Fleury thinks he's got something to offer and wants to hang around, and he's clearly happy in Minnesota, and they're clearly happy with him, and him being a tandem there is fine and dandy, I suppose. Good on him for sticking to it. Although it does render, all the farewells that we had this season. Like you said, there's only so many times you can say goodbye to somebody until you're like, all right, leave.
Do you think that this means that he'll get the start in Pittsburgh next year?
Oh God. Yeah, definitely. Right. It is funny to think about all the ink that has been spilled and all the tears that streak down cheeks about Marc-Andre Fleury's farewell.
Hey,
and
listen,
I'm going to do it again next year.
I'm guilty as anybody else. My big thing this year is this is going to be the swan song for Marc-Andre Fleury. So let's do something special for him and vote him for the Lady Bing. A goaltender can win the Lady Bing. There's nothing against a goaltender winning the Lady Bing. He's been a gentleman his entire career. He's been a lot of fun to cover. He's been a lot of fun to watch. Let's let Marc-Andre Fleury make history and give him the Lady Bing. It's a good thing I didn't fill out my ballot before this announcement, or else I would have had Marc-Andre Fleury number one for the Lady Bing.
Hmm. There's so much I want to say right now about declaring who you're voting for an award, but I'll just leave it at that. I will say I hope that people can check out my Nikita Kucherov piece on ESPN.com today, where I make the case for Cooch.
I was going to say, is that your first pick for the heart?
It ain't a wink. I mean, like, I think like many other people in media.
Yeah.
I am saying who my pick is going to be. I think that's okay. As long as we don't release our full ballots, I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. And Kucherov, I think, has the best case. I spell it out in the piece, and it's not to say. And again, the reason why I felt comfortable writing about this is that there's no wrong answer. Like, if you think it's McKinnon, or if you think it's McDavid or Panarin or Matthews or Quinn Hughes or Roman Josi or Connor Hellebuck, you're right. It is. it doesn't matter. We're all going to be okay this year, no matter who wins this award, because for the first time in my lifetime as a voter, there's no wrong answer.
Okay.
It's just that I happen to think that Kucherov is the more correct answer than the other ones.
Dare you to vote for Charlie Lindgren.
Why not? Where are the cap? Hey, listen, as everyone knows, the only thing I care about in this award is whether or not the guys in the playoffs. And honestly, his team wouldn't be there were it not for him. Why do we have the Hart Trophy if not to laud that kind of accomplishment? But yeah, Cooch, in breaking it down, like becoming, I think, only the seventh guy in NHL history to have a point on over 50% of his team's goals in a season. And a lot of the other awards, like accolades. Again, I understand the guy's 5-on-5 defense is not exactly Bergeron-esque, but he does a lot of other things that are better than that. And to me, I think Kucherov's my guy. But again, no wrong answers. If you're a PHWA voter, and you read my story today, you're like, I better do what Wyshynski does. Don't do that. In fact, never do that for anything in life. Don't do anything that I do. Don't emulate me. Don't do anything.
You're trying.
Go vote and on your own merits. This is just one man's opinion.
So you're saying that essentially your life is a cautionary tale, and it's the meaning of your life is to serve as a warning to others. Am I reading that correctly?
That is absolutely right. Exactly. Charles Barkley, I am not a role model except a hockey writer. That's exactly what we're talking about here.
Okay, well, on that we'll leave you. We'll talk in 7 days, Greg. Check out Greg's latest at ESPN.com. Thanks, buddy. As always, say hi to Arda for me.
Anytime. Thanks.